Well, hello, everyone. We have a very exciting panel today, optimizing corporate strategy and capital sourcing. You know, I'd like to take this opportunity, let you guys introduce yourselves. I think everybody in this room knows who you are, but why don't you take this opportunity to introduce yourself, give your platform a little bit of a plug, and how you interface with the shipping industry. Why don't you start us out, Krista?
Sure. Are these on? Okay. Hi, my name is Krista Volpicelli. I run our shipping investment banking business at Citigroup. Have been with the firm for over 20 years. All of my colleagues on the shipping team at Citi have been at the firm the same amount of time or longer that I have. I'd like to think that we are unique as a firm in terms of one of the bulge brackets that is consistently focused on the sector. I only spend time on shipping clients and the related infrastructure and services with a focus on capital markets and M&A. And then we, of course, have a broader platform kind of where we do it all, lending, cash management, export finance, et cetera. But nice to see everyone today.
Hey, everyone. Espen Lisdal with Clarkson Securities. I co-head the investment banking team covering the shipping services of Clarkson Securities, which is the investment banking arm of the Clarkson Plata Group. I've been with the firm for roughly 8 years, enough to experience at least one full cycle of shipping, and really happy to be here today. Our firm holds a market-leading position for raising capital for maritime industries, and we'll always be one company that focuses that will be there and focus on maritime raising capital for maritime industries. Thanks for having me here, and look forward to a good discussion.
Jim Sorenza from DNB Markets. I'm responsible for fixed income and equity sales here. I've been with DNB for just over 12 years, and for the 12 years that I've worked at DNB, we do well when shipping and offshore does well. So whether as a bank, whether it's lending or an investment bank, between the debt capital markets, equity capital markets, M&A, or just in terms of our roadshow activities and our secondary trading activities, sectors that touch the water are very, very important to our survival.
Well, you know, as we talk about strategy and capital sourcing, you know, it's hard to do that in a vacuum. We're facing a lot of macro issues right now. There's wars going on. We're in an election year. You know, rates are up. You know, Krista, maybe you can kind of set the stage for us, talk about the markets generally. You could provide it from a U.S. perspective, you know, and then Espen and James can kind of give a more European view and, you know, given where their banks are located.
Sure, absolutely. So from the perspective of the broader capital markets, the markets are open. Equity markets are strong, convertible markets are strong, debt markets are strong. In shipping, I would say we are in a unique position where many shipping companies don't need money. So tanker companies have a ton of liquidity, have been paying down debt. Expect to earn a lot of money over the next 12 months. There's other sectors that are the same. And so I think when I think about capital markets conditions, it has been slower in the U.S. for sure over the last couple of years, but that's really been a function of companies not needing to raise capital, which is a good thing. You never as a company want to be raising dilutive capital when you don't have ways to deploy it effectively for your shareholders. But I think we are at a pretty interesting inflection point because you are starting to see share prices trade at levels where maybe it makes sense for companies to think about things. We are reaching a point in the debt markets where there's just better visibility in terms of what might happen. And so I think issuers are getting comfortable with returning to the bond markets again. And as I said, the convertible markets continue to be quite strong in a way that some of the larger shipping companies, you know, could potentially issue capital at attractive rates on the debt side as well as close that gap to NAV.
Great. Thank you. Espen, you want to take it more from a European perspective?
Yeah, I guess, well said, Krista. I think, you know, we do see a lot of the same in in Oslo Capital Markets. Just for the record, we have a tradition of having worked quite a bit with U.S. issuers as well, although there has been less activity on this side of the Atlantic over the past 5 to 10 years. But yes, markets are absolutely open. I would say that investors are perhaps a little bit more selective than they were in the previous cycle. And I think the main difference now compared to in the previous sort of IPO years of 2013 to 2015 is that we have about 50 or so well-established listed investable companies. And we don't necessarily need another peer. You need to be differentiating and have a bit of a different strategy to tap into these markets now as sort of a new kid on the block. But yeah, overall, we're seeing the same things. I think markets are very constructive, and the interest for shipping is absolutely there amongst investors, both on equity and credits.
Jim, anything to add?
Listen, for the debt capital market side, this may be as good as it gets. We're going to end up at the end of this first quarter with more than $500 billion worth of investment grade issuance in the U.S. We're going to end up between investment grade, high yield, and term loan Bs with probably somewhere north of $700 billion of issuance in the U.S. Unless central banks start printing money again, this may be as good as it gets. We've got high yield credit spreads at the tightest that we've seen since the best of the fourth quarter. So the issuance amongst many industries is substantial right now, and the shipping industry has been in a better position than most. But the availability of debt capital right now is phenomenal. The availability of raising a convertible bond right now is phenomenal, and the equity side is just less tested. But nonetheless, the equity IPOs that have come to the market for the most part in the last 12 months have traded very well, minus a few that came in October of last year. So the equity markets also appear to be open, but I do believe there'll be a competition for capital before this year is over.
So the panel is about optimizing corporate strategy and capital sourcing. These concepts are fundamentally intertwined. You really can't talk about one without the other, unless you're a politician, of course. But for shipping companies, as companies look to optimize their corporate strategy, Christy, you mentioned shipping companies have cash. They may not even need to raise cash. Where should they be deploying those funds?
That's a great question, and if any of us can answer that perfectly, we'd probably be making a lot more money than we are today. But I think that shipping is cyclical, so when companies are making money, it's oftentimes where they don't want to be investing in assets. I think that the answer is really, it depends. I do think that we are seeing strength in some of the larger companies who are building up cash, who are building up liquidity. And what you are seeing today is even larger companies who have cash available are not necessarily using that cash to buy assets. Some of them are using their shares to buy assets. And that is, perhaps one of the more powerful things about being public than simply being able to raise new capital. If you don't need to raise capital with your public stock, but you can use a currency to be continuing to grow in an accretive way, that becomes very powerful. So you are seeing companies take some of their cash, excess cash, and pay dividends. Some are buying back shares. I think some are thinking about, how can I use this cash, perhaps as things turn a little bit. I think you are seeing owners think about entering into different segments, as an example. Gone are the days where you have to be a pure play company to be successful in the public markets. I think it's a more nuanced discussion today. So there's not a perfect answer that you can just say generically, this is how you should spend your cash. I think the answer is truly, it depends.
Thanks. Jim, you want to talk about where companies should be a little overweight? How should they spend their cash and their currency and shares?
Yeah, so first let's think about the maturity cycle of debt. I think about 2019, 20, 21, 22 as, in terms of issuance, as big, bigger, biggest, and big again. So you roll 5 years forward, and there's a maturity calendar to deal with, which doesn't affect this room as it affects most industries. But if you look at what most industries are doing over the last couple of months in terms of what's going on in the issuance market, yes, they're dealing with maturities that are rolling off, but the amount of money that's being diverted to again buy back shares and pay dividends in other industries is substantial. And if your stock is trading at a healthy level, and if you can raise money at a tight spread to treasuries, the notion of paying a dividend isn't a bad idea. And if your stock is trading at a bigger discount to NAV, the notion of buying back shares might not be a bad idea. This wouldn't be the only industry, once again, that would borrow money to buy shares.
Espen, anything to add?
I think it's been well summarized by Krista and James. The only thing I would like to add is that, you know, depending a little bit on what the overall corporate strategy is and you know, what sector or segment you're in, I think over time you'll see that the companies that have consistently been paying a high proportion of their free cash flow as dividends are also those that are priced the most attractive over time. That's proven.
Right. So let's stay with you, Espen. I mean, Clarkson's reported a record year this year, you know, a lot on the back of, you know, very high S&P activity. You know, as companies think about their strategies as to whether to strengthen the balance sheet, pursue growth, you know, Krista mentioned, well, maybe it's not the best time to buy assets given the elevated prices. You know, maybe we use shares as currency. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about, you know, whether folks should be pursuing growth. Should it be in one-off vessel transactions? Or do you think over time we may see more fleet acquisitions, which are a little bit more elusive in the shipping business?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a good question, and I think that the larger sort of fleet acquisitions are more and more difficult to come by. We saw last year perhaps the largest VLCC transaction in history, which was done by Frontline without issuing a single share, which says something about the robustness of these listed companies. So the balance sheets of these companies are better than they've been in decades, right? So when it comes to, you know, fleet modernization and growth, I think, you know, not just think of it as growth, because growth at any cost, that's just not, you know, sustainable. It needs to be profitable, and then you need to be selective, and those deals are hard to come by. So I don't have the answer, but I think acquiring something on the water by you know, issuing shares or, you know, partly settling with shares makes a lot of sense.
Jim, you know, anything to add there? Should folks be raising capital to grow their business these days?
Well, listen, there's been an advantage of being big in the U.S. We're at, institutionally, we're probably at 60% passive money versus active money. So the index effect here in the U.S. is enormous. And so there's an advantage to being big, there's an advantage to being big in other markets as well. M&A has certainly been an important topic in the last 6 months, you know, even represented in at this conference today with, you know, Anetti and with Euronav. So there's been plenty of activity, you know, on that front. So whether it's raising money to help pay for an acquisition or raising money to return funds to shareholders, as Espen said, companies that return the most money to shareholders tend to trade at a better valuation.
Right. You know, Kristen, you had mentioned, you know, some companies are wholesale changing their strategies and pursuing other lines of business right now. You know, we're missing Eric, you know, from NASDAQ, who has an ESG focus. And so I wanted to get his views on that. But as we think about ESG, and I know it's a broad topic, so, you know, maybe we'll just focus on the energy transition piece of it and the E part. You know, how much do you think companies have to focus, you know, on the energy transition piece in the sense that, you know, are investors supporting it? Are they demanding it? You know, we're seeing companies, you know, we just heard Jerry, they're changing their corporate strategy. We see the folks you mentioned, the frontline transaction, Euronav's changing its strategy, going to a more, you know, green bend. You know, how much do companies need to focus on energy transition? Does it need to be immediate? Can it be gradual? You know, sort of what are you seeing in the market? What are investors looking for? You know, how do you view that?
Sure. It's a complex question, but I think 100% of companies have to be focused on energy transition topics. And they all have to be focused in the immediate term on just, you know, what's happening in the world with respect to regulation and emissions and the new EU restrictions. And so there's a very much an immediate dynamic here of how any type of shipping company is running their business to comply with the new regulations. But I would say, and it depends on the shipping sector, you know, there was a presentation about kind of the adoption of alternative fuels for new builds. And you're seeing that the greatest in the container shipping sector, where you have point-to-point voyages. It's easier to think about the supply at ports. You have customers who are demanding it. I think one of the product tanker CEOs made a comment that their customers aren't demanding it today. So it does depend by sector, but I think that, you know, even sectors where it's perhaps less timely today, in the tanker sector, for example, every management team is thinking about, you know, what is the medium-term plan, what is the long-term plan. Your shareholders aren't going to pay you for something today in terms of making decisions that aren't economic for the company. But if you're not thinking about those things over the longer term, then, you know, if you look a decade out, it will have an impact on shareholder returns.
Aspen?
Yeah, I think it's obviously a really important topic. How relevant it is for investor appetite today, it's debatable. I think it's unfortunately, you know, money talks, and the companies that earn the most capital and pay the highest dividends are those that are being, you know, rewarded the most in, you know, in capital markets today. But I'm sure that will change over time. And I think, quite frankly, that private capital would have to perhaps take the lead on that when you see where public companies are trading.
Jim, anything to add? I know you also are focused on, you know, these sustainability-linked bonds. I mean, maybe you can talk generally about, you know, how you view that.
Well, first of all, from the economics of the next fuels, I would encourage everyone to go to the lunch today, because Alex from Euronav has an interesting perspective on the market, which is economic, not just you know, a wish. As far as investors are concerned, things have certainly cooled off in the U.S., which is not necessarily true in Europe, but they've certainly cooled off from an investor perspective in the U.S. as it relates to ESG. And one interesting stat that I read this weekend was, you know, you go through all the Q4 reports, and we're 99% of the way there, so let's assume the numbers are going to pretty much stick. Only 6% of the companies on their Q4 reports even mentioned the word ESG. I can't tell you how much that's down in the last 2 years, and that takes us back to where we were 5 years ago. So from a U.S. investor point of view, that discussion has faded quite a bit, but I think there's an important economic discussion to listen to starting at lunch today.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree. Now, I want to pivot here a little bit and start talking about capital sourcing. Now, you know, Krista said the markets are open. Jim, you said the time may be the best now. You know, maybe you could just kind of unpack that a little bit. You know, tell us what's available to companies. What are you seeing? What are you pitching clients on? You know, what should we expect to see in the coming months in terms of how companies will source capital? If you, yes, but do you want to start us out and then?
Yeah, sure. I'll reveal all my secrets. I think it's been said already that it's fairly evident that access to capital, and perhaps debt capital markets in particular, have probably never been better than they are right now. So whether you're looking to bank finance your fleet, or looking to tap the high yield market or the convertible bond market, U.S. private placements, direct lending, say leasebacks, I think there's never been more capital available for our industries than it is right now. So so that's on the debt side. And personally, I think when we're looking at the listed companies that we cover, apart from if we exclude LNG from the from these calculations, I think the net LTV of the median company that we cover ranges between 20% and 30%. That's a historical low number. And it's a historical low number simultaneously as you can lend unsecured at the margin, which James explained earlier, which is also sort of a historical low compared to past cycles. So, as an example, not that we have that many options, but let's say we have a shipping company, a single B credit, could price unsecured bonds between 7% and 8%. They can do convertibles between maybe 2.5% and 3%, and the floating or the 5-year swap rate is around 4%. I think it gives a pretty good idea of how much capital that is available and that it is attractively priced.
Jim?
Listen, we've seen so much activity as it relates to the offshore sector in the last 12 months. There were more than 10 U.S. bond deals in the last 12 months with the offshore sector. And if you include the tide waters and everything that touches energy in the process, the ability to source capital in the U.S. and to source capital in Europe, but the ability to source capital in the U.S. has been outstanding. My perspective is it just can't stay outstanding forever. U.S. Treasury is going to issue some more bonds before the year's over, and at some point. Again, if central banks aren't printing money, at some point the availability of cash will be reduced. But the environment for the last 12 months for everything that floats and everything that touches energy has been really good. And I think between now and the end of the second quarter would be a wonderful time to tap the market.
Yeah, I'd piggyback on what Jim was talking about. We've helped some of the offshore companies in the U.S. bond markets as well over the last 12 months. And I do think that the decision of a company for U.S. versus Norway continues to be driven by size and rating, but there's not a pricing arbitrage in the sense that you can go to Norway and get cheaper debt. I think you are seeing, as companies get larger, where the markets are today, there is more discussion around, potentially coming to the bond markets here. I think the timing issue, so we're in a very good market today. I think people also have to be mindful that it is an election year in the U.S. And so that also can impact, if you will want to be coming to the market in kind of the last quarter. So I think our advice to issuers who are thinking about coming to the debt or equity markets in the U.S. this year is you should be thinking about that for the first half to first 9 months, because there's no question about it, it will get more volatile the longer that we go.
Well, you talked a little bit about the U.S. versus Norway. What sort of differences do you see between the two markets? Anecdotally, we're seeing a lot of bond issuances come out of Norway right now. The equity capital markets in the U.S. have been a little quiet. Maybe you could just speak to a little bit about the difference of the markets and what your experience is with both of them and how folks should look at them. Maybe you could start out, Espen.
Yeah, sure. I think there's been obviously less issuance over the past 5 to 10 years, but the market that's been the most active have been Norwegian issuers on the equity side. I think the reason for that is primarily because it's a market where it is easier to tap the market quickly and more rapidly and more efficiently, both for established issuers and also for new market new companies IPOing. In Norway, you could actually, you know, carry out an IPO process as a private placement, and then, you know, conclude the listing process and you know, not sell off a prospectus from day one, which gives you a lot more flexibility, which is required in this industry, which is fairly cyclical, I would say. So that's a little bit on equity markets. I think debt capital markets, for equity markets, it's always been sort of a perception that you know, go to Norway for growth and US for value. I think we have a lot of listed companies in Oslo that are high paying dividend companies, so that's not necessarily true in this cycle. But we have seen a shift where many companies that have completed sort of their first part of their journey on the Oslo Stock Exchange are now at least migrating to a dual listing in the US. So that's a trend we're seeing. And I completely agree with Krista on observation on debt capital markets and pricing and what you choose to do. But obviously there is cost associated with those transactions, and there is time to market and speed to market, which arguably is a bit different in Norway than in the US.
Jim, Oslo versus New York?
Yeah, first to touch base on the equity side. I think too many companies feel pressured to come to the US too early. Raising $100 million on a US IPO, it's not going to be long before your security is lost. Lack of research coverage, lack of average daily trading volume, and lack of index inclusion. There's a time to come to the US market. I think when it comes to a place like Norway, there's an efficiency of speed and there's an efficiency of size, and that size isn't unlimited. You know, can someone raise $1 billion in a Norwegian bond offer? I don't know. It's never been done. So up to a certain size, up to a few $100 million, whether it's equity or debt, the speed and the pricing, I still think there's an advantage at the moment. It's not a massive advantage, but I do think there's an advantage at the moment. But as you get bigger, as you get larger, your choices become very few.
So, Krista, there's a lot more alternative financing that's become available. You know, I kind of want to focus on, you know, the public versus the private markets that are available for companies to raise money. You know, the public markets have been quiet lately, but, you know, we've seen a resurgence of bank financing, sale leasebacks, other alternatives, private credit. You know, maybe you could just talk a little bit about one, what you're seeing in terms of the public versus private sources of capital that are available, you know, and what folks should expect in the near term.
Sure. I think it's a great question, because there has been, with a slowdown in public market activity in shipping over the last 5 years, there's been a pickup in private investors spending time in shipping. And I think we talked on another panel about how, you know, there's been a number of companies in some of the contracted sectors of shipping, whether that's LNG or container ship, that have been taken private by infrastructure funds over the last several years. And, you know, the amount of capital in the infrastructure funds has been growing tremendously. They're longer duration investments than typical private equity, and they can be well suited for the more infrastructure-like sectors of shipping that do have long-term contracts. So we have seen that. Private credit funds, private capital, I mean, all of the big funds have different pockets of capital that can do different things. And in fact, one of the challenges that we face in engaging with private capital is because interest rates have gone up, and you start to think about talking to a private investor about investing in equity of a project. Well, many of the big investors today have the ability to do equity, they have the ability to do debt, they have the ability to do mezzanine financing, and they will play across the capital structure. So I think you've seen in more commodity sectors of shipping, investors say, well, I can get a better guaranteed return when I'm looking at more credit or mezzanine type investments. And, you know, so there's that game that gets played in terms of where do you play in the capital stack with respect to risk and reward. But all that capital is there. You know, when we've been running M&A processes for companies, you know, oftentimes we will go out to a selection of private credit funds who might be very supportive in terms of a transaction. So I'd say there's no cookie cutter solution, but funds have gotten quite global in their scope and have different pockets that can be suitable for all sectors of shipping, really. It just depends whether you're talking about debt or equity.
Thank you. Espen?
I think we're seeing a lot of the same things. While we perhaps have seen sort of the traditional private equity funds be more sort of exiting at least commodity shipping, we're seeing sort of an inflow of that same recycled capital at a, you know, lower cost of capital structure or packeted as infrastructure funds be more active into, you know, the more infrastructure-like segments such as LNG. There is, I guess the main shift has been that at least the deals that have been contemplated, which predominantly have been issuers out of Oslo, they've also attracted, at least roughly speaking, 70% of the capital from European accounts and then perhaps 30% from the US, whereas we saw in the previous cycle that number geographically was the opposite. There are probably many reasons as to why that is, including, you know, less, I guess, sell side and buy side coverage of our industries in this market in the US. Remains to be seen. I know that's not been the case for some of the drilling bonds that have been placed. So it really depends.
Jim?
The only thing I would add is, as I said earlier, institutional investors' focus on ESG has faded a bit from where it was 2 years ago, but I don't think that's true with the private equity investors, and one of the reasons why LNG has been one of those segments that has attracted private money is because LNG obviously fits the narrative of ESG quite well.
So, Jim, let's stay with you. I mean, while we're talking about investors, you know, maybe we could talk a little bit about investor sentiment. You know, we've had a significant run-up. You know, stocks, you know, we're trading lower. A lot of them have been up 5x. You know, asset prices are up. You know, how are investors thinking about the market, level of participation, you know, wanting to do deals? What deals do they want to do? You know, I'll leave it kind of open-ended. Maybe you could just talk about, you know, the investors in generally and their appetite at these levels.
Well, listen, they keep telling us they still have appetite, but with these surveys that I see and with the feedback that I get, and I just came back from our shipping and offshore conference in Oslo last week, and we had 1,100 people show up. Anyone who thinks that the first week of March in Oslo is a wonderful place to visit on vacation, you probably haven't been there. Anyway, the interest is as good as I've ever seen it, and the sentiment is as good as I've ever seen it. The cash levels now are substantially lower than they've been amongst institutions in the last 2 years, and the cash levels on the retail side of the business are as low as they've been in 12 months. And so the optimism right now is very, very high, but the cash levels don't necessarily match it. And one other thing to point out, it's one of these things I pay attention to every week, is the Lipper fund flows data. So last year, $600 billion came out of U.S. equity funds $300 billion went into equity ETFs. That's almost $1 trillion. That's a big swing. As of last week, we have had 108 straight weeks where active equity managers on balance have had withdrawals. So yes, they're very bullish. Yes, shipping matters a lot. Yes, they're polling very bullishly on the market, but their cash levels are relatively low. So again, the markets are great. The enthusiasm is there. I wouldn't wait 6 months.
Krista?
So we're at an interesting point in time in the world. I think a lot of investors look at shipping and they say, there's a lot going on geopolitically. We have two canals where there are disruptions. There's lots of reasons why shipping companies are making money, perhaps, that are definitely impacted by what's happening in the world. And no one knows exactly when some of these situations will end. So I do think that that is a question on people's mind. I think that there are sectors where there are structural reasons in terms of a low order book to believe that even once you get past some of these temporary disruptions in the world, that things should be good for a while. But I do think that investors are looking at the companies that are making money. They're wondering how long it will last. I think it's a great thing how most public company management teams are being thoughtful about their balance sheets, because what you're hearing from a lot of the panelists that are here today is they are preparing themselves for an environment where these things don't last forever. Because one thing we know in shipping is whatever we think might happen in the next 2 months is probably something different will happen. And so I think it's important for companies to prepare. And I think as investors start to look in, they do see companies that are more prepared. And so that's why the first part of some of your questions focused on growth are very much relevant, because ultimately equity investors are thinking about how will these stock prices grow over time? How will these companies be able to deliver growth, not just from the cycle and earnings, but sustained growth within their company? So I do think that that's the focus, and that's a key question.
Thanks, Krista. Espen, anything to add on the investing community?
I think most things have been covered. I would like to add that perhaps we are approaching sort of a time in a cycle where it is extremely difficult to navigate and find, you know, the next candidate, as for instance product tankers 3 years ago. I don't know if you for those of you that attended the product tanker panel earlier, you could see that Christopher showed a graph that where product tankers have returned over the past 3 years. The listed product tanker names have returned more than 700% to shareholders. It's extremely difficult to find similar investment thesis in shipping today, but there are still parts or certain sectors that looks really good from an investment perspective. So, but they're more and more difficult to come by those opportunities. So, yeah.
Well, we only have 2 minutes left. I wanted to give you guys an opportunity to sort of give your closing remarks. Anything you didn't get to talk about, or if you just wanted to sort of sum up on, you know, what your message to the audience should be. Jim, if you just want to start it, we could go down the line.
Ellis, I think shipping is great. I hope that more and more investors wake up to the sector. I hope that very few investment banks decide to wake up to the sector. I'd like to keep the lending group as tight as it is today, but I think shipping's great.
Yes.
If I was an investor today, not a banker, I would be, you know, all over shipping. I think it's a segment where we've seen consecutively disciplined ownership over time, and it's truly true that this time is different. So it's definitely a sector to watch.
I would say capital is there. Equity capital is there. Debt capital is there. It's not one size fit all, not for investors, not for companies. But those of us on this panel are here to help. And thanks for taking the time with us today.
Well, I just want to thank everyone, thank my panelists for a great conversation here. Nicholas, as always, thank you for putting on a terrific conference, and thank you for having us.